across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning, July 18th, 2024. It's another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network or through the Civic Media app, maybe watching us on social media or catching us later by podcast. Thanks for subscribing, taking us along on your day. You can reach us for the show at any given time at 855-75-CIVIC. Again, 855-75-CIVIC. You hear so few calls with comments and questions because it's this early. Don't be shy. It's 6:07. We're always happy to hear from you. And, if we're busy talking to a guest, maybe playing something back on tape, we'll get to you. We want to hear what you've got to say. We love reading your comments on Facebook and on YouTube, let's bring in Greg Bach from Waukesha here because we have to do this properly. Mr. Bach, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. How are you? I'm doing well, and thank you. And how are you?
Okay, very good. Thanks. All right.
Goodbye.
speaking of comments, Tony's up in Ashland, and first he writes on YouTube, Pat, and then he follows up with, thought you might like a chant like J.D. Vance got last night. So apparently I missed people chanting J.D. Vance's name.
That doesn't
but
have
Tony's
the same
chanting
rhythm.
Mine. Yeah, it doesn't.
J.D.,
yeah.
J.D., J.D., J.D.
No, it doesn't work the same. So, no, you don't have to chant, my name or Greg's name, but if you have a comment or question today, put it on Facebook or YouTube if you're watching us there, or send us a text, 855-75-CIVIC. And we see it if I put the right window up on screen. Let me get that there. There, now I can see your texts when they come in. Otherwise, I just see, funny messages from Greg. He's really good at that. So we're going to jump into it's just a busy show today. We've talked to a couple of folks earlier. I talked to Scott Ross last night at the convention. We'll hear from him in just a couple of minutes about the J.D. Vance pick and others. We will hear from Joe Zepecki, as we always do on Thursday mornings, about the convention and some of the issues at play. In our second hour, we will get to meet Richard Trent. He's the new national director of the Main Street Alliance. That's a national group that works on behalf of small businesses and trying to get the message to the Republican Party, you're doing a lot of things wrong in terms of what small businesses need. So we'll talk to Richard Trent about those issues. And then we'll have our Women Win Wisconsin segment. And that one has State Senate candidate Kelly Peterson joining Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy later this morning. And then we wrap things up with Luke Mathers, as we always do on Thursdays. 6 a.m. temperatures include 54 here on Lake Wissota. Hayward, it's at 44. It's in the 40s in July in Wisconsin, which, again, if this was your week for tent camping, first off, you're probably not listening, but second, sorry, but stay cuddled up in the sleeping bag. 44 in Hayward, 46 in Park Falls, 55 in Wausau, 55 in Green Bay. La Crosse is at 57. Wisconsin Rapids is 50. Oshkosh at 56. Madison, 54. Waukesha, 54 degrees as well. We are in the midst of the All-Star break here. The Brewers are off for a couple of more days. They're back in action Saturday evening at Minnesota. So you can catch the Brewers-Twins game Saturday, Sunday. The Saturday game, the pregame, starts at 5:35 on Civic Media stations WRCE in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls, WISS in Oshkosh. And then there's a Sunday afternoon game before the Brewers head to Chicago to play against the Cubs. And remember, from an Up North News standpoint, we have a daily newsletter that you can sign up for. Head to our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com. Click newsletter in the top banner, and you'll be all up to date on the things that Christina Laurie puts together for us every day. Did you notice, Greg, that this is the first time I've been wearing a long sleeve shirt in nearly forever with these cool temperatures up here? And I'm here for it. I'm okay. Maybe not so much Alicia Saunders, who says, I think I can see my breath in Marinette this morning. I could believe it. It's a little chilly.
I could listen to that song. I think I can see my breath in Marinette. Because it's so cool. I could take this. I'm serious. I'm all for the 50s and the 60s. And if it's in the 40s where you're at, don't be like,
I'm good.
It's so cold.
I'm good. I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
The coming back to the whole part of, you know, living in the Caribbean for a time, when you're there between Christmas and Easter, it is glorious.
Yeah.
It is paradise. From Easter to Christmas, you're living next to an exhaust vent from hell, it feels like. And when you come back here and experience temperatures in the 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, not 0 degrees, but, you know, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
I mean, it just feels so good after being in constant 90s week after week after week. And I think sometimes we take that for granted. So, because when people say, well, why did you move back? And part of it was we missed seasons, obviously, family and friends. And part of it, too, was while we were down there, y'all elected Donald Trump as president. So we're like, okay, something's wrong. I got to go back. And that takes us into our coverage of the convention. First, I'm happy to report that neither Derek Van Orden nor the woman that he had a bump into in the line, she bumped him or he bumped her, who knows what, no charges will be filed. So Derek Van Orden, after claiming a vicious assault, it turns out they looked at the police body camera and said in so many words to Congressman Van Orden, get the hell out of here.
No. He referred to it as political violence.
Yes, it's political violence, you poor sweet baby. And of course, Derek Van Orden was involved in a dust-up at the convention day before yesterday when Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz was mocking former Speaker Kevin McCarthy.
Yeah.
Because, of course, you have to have a little catfight down there. And Van Orden decided to insert himself as well and hollered at Matt Gaetz and called him a little bitch.
Whoa!
We now get the extreme language warning on the label on this morning show, thanks to Derek Van Orden wanting to, you know, start a little playground fracas. The man needs anger management counseling. I mean, in just these two instances this week, he continues to prove this. And it's going to be an issue with whatever Democrat runs against him. Which reminds me, this week in Eau Claire on Tuesday, the three Democrats who are vying to take on Derek Van Orden had their final candidate forum. Luke Mathers was part of taping that for Civic Media, and it's going to be put up on our websites as a podcast. So we're going to ask Luke about details for that coming up a little later in the program. But also at the convention, of course, there was an immigration theme. And look, we all want secure borders. We all want immigration reform. We all remember that it was Donald Trump who killed a bipartisan deal. And yet they still have the cojones to talk about immigration last night. And I think it's best exemplified in this short clip from Texas Governor Greg Abbott really bringing the white nationalism to the convention theme of immigration.
He will arrest the criminal illegal immigrants and put them behind bars or send them back.
And what follows is several seconds of send them back, which again shows a whole lot of folks who have completely forgotten their roots. And who dishonor their great grandparents and others. And don't tell me they played by the rules. The rules weren't the same back then. And they were all trying to escape terrible things back in their homelands. And they too would have moved heaven and earth to come here if they'd been in the position that some people in Central America are in right now. We don't need mass deportations. We don't need mass camps. We need immigrants. We need immigrants in this country badly. We need immigration reform. And that's something that Republicans purposefully killed for no good reason. They're not going to get a better deal next year. Doesn't matter who's in control. Unless somebody's got 60 Senate votes to break a filibuster, it's going to have to be a bipartisan deal. And they had a chance to have that, and they blew it. Ohio Senator J.D. Vance gave his acceptance speech as the vice presidential nominee. J.D. Vance's ascension to the ticket is somewhat personal for me. I grew up poor, like he did. I don't look back and spit on the ground of my old neighborhoods. I see where I was fortunate. Thanks not only to my hard work and family support, but the government investments that allowed me to have a good education, food, housing, safety, opportunity. But you really didn't learn that kind of appreciation from J.D. Vance in his speech. His speech reportedly was about as shallow as his book. For a guy who knew enough to write about and speak last night about how the rich and the powerful make decisions that ruin the working class, he seems to lack the awareness that he's now owned by one of the rich and powerful in his ongoing quest to be one of them himself. And when you walk among them, you adopt their mindset that everything is the fault of the poor. He's forgotten his roots, plain and simple. Now look, folks, some folks can climb out of and break that circle of poverty. Not everybody can. That's not making excuses for the chronically poor, by the way. It's recognition that if you didn't get a good start in life, you're in trouble. A good start, a loving family, a good school, being surrounded by people with a work ethic. That good start is what becomes your bootstraps. And then you take it from there. But you can't pull yourself up by your bootstraps if they don't exist. Good public officials understand that. They know that it's cheaper for taxpayers to pay for a few scholarships, food stamps, economic development projects. All of that is less expensive than a lifetime in prison, more police, more institutions, and so on. J.D. Vance grew up poor, but not without the makings of those bootstraps. He had a grandma who cared. He had a grandpa with a union job. And yet here he is now, as a United States senator, attacking the things that enabled his grandparents to give him a chance to get out of Appalachia. He'd rather keep women just like his mother tied down in poverty, unable to get the health care they need, unable to escape physical abuse, unable to afford an education. J.D. Vance likes to talk about his roots, but he has lost touch with them. His roots to him are a political prop. To blame the poor for being poor and to say that cutting the social contract is some kind of tough love when there's no love involved in his political ideology at all. Only opportunity for himself, only power, only a willingness to kiss somebody's behind to become a running mate to someone that he once called America's Hitler. Or maybe he always admired Trump and was just lying to his friends. I wouldn't put it past him, given what we've learned about J.D. Vance so far. We'll talk to Scott Ross from Panther Arena at the Republican National Convention coming up in a bit, wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Thursday morning when you're here, you're up north. And Scott Ross joins us now from Panther Arena, where he is spending Wednesday evening on day three of proceedings. Mr. Ross, how are you?
Pat, great to talk to you. Yes, indeed. I am here watching a giant screen that has, Kellyanne Conway.
Oh, alternative facts lady. Yeah. You know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing a photo that has been making the rounds on social media. Every convention has little placards, you know, mass printed very quickly. Some I'm sure say Trump Vance and some say Make America Strong Again. Here's the one I'm looking at right now that's been passed all around. All it says is mass deportation now. And I thought, well, is this coming from the Trump campaign? Is it coming from some fringe group? You zoom way in on it and it says paid for by the Republican National Committee. Scott, I'm wondering what generation we're living in.
Well, it's ghoulish. I mean, but I think it's what we've seen. We've seen, you know, a party that's completely and totally held hostage by racism, corruption, and extremism. And that is what we have gotten all 3 days of this convention. You know, I point out Trump and the Republicans promised unity, but they have put on what I consider to be the most divisive national convention I've seen, Democratic or Republican, in my lifetime.
Oh, sure. But it's tough to figure out, you know, which is the more extreme part of it. Is it the deportations part? Is it the threat to democracy part? And I feel like in choosing J.D. Vance, to give the Wednesday night speech as the VP nominee, they're kind of getting all of the extremism rolled into one. And yet they somehow think he can still keep that hillbilly elegy veneer of he's an aw shucks country boy. Is that going to play?
I don't think so, because again, who is he? He is an author, a Yale law graduate, and a guy who, in his own book, in his own words, said that the way he was able to survive was because he lived with his grandparents, his grandfather, who had a union job and union benefits. And he has led the charge with Republicans in the very short time he's been in the Senate to stand in the way of any progress when it comes to unions and to literally do everything he can to take away their rights and their power, because he is in the pocket of guys like Peter Thiel, the gazillionaire, who put $15 million into his first race, which is why he's here in the first place. Elon Musk, these are the two guys who wanted Trump to put Vance on the ticket, and Vance is on the ticket.
And there he is. And now I'm not going to get into what's happening at the Democratic ticket. Things are just moving too fast. You know, you just had the president's COVID diagnosis. You've got polling going left and right. We're just not going to do that here. Since the signs about mass deportation were put up by the RNC, I just want you to think as somebody with the DNC, and you see the extreme overconfidence coming out of the Milwaukee convention among Republicans, what are your first messaging moves to whatever counts for swing voters out there these days? What do you tell them coming out of the Republican convention during this lull before the Democratic one?
Well, there's a reason why Republicans are assaulting the Constitution, because they want to take away people's rights. They've shown that with taking away abortion rights. They've shown that with attacking unions. They've shown that with attacking, you know, a whole slew of folks. And again, with the end result of they have put one person, Trump, above the law. You know, we live in a, you know, America that I know was that nobody is above the law. A rigged Trump Supreme Court made Trump above the law. It's disgusting. The guy's got 34 felony convictions, and they're, you know, acting as though it's a badge of honor rather than a disgrace.
Right. They're embracing that. And, certainly Democrats will be going after that. Meanwhile, in President Biden or the Biden-Harris administration or Democrats, whatever you want to call it, you have what is, without argument, the most productive legislative agenda that is in the process of being put into action. We can spend a lot of time debating whether the Biden White House did enough over the past 2 years to trumpet that, but that's academic. What needs to be done on the good news front of things that, okay, forget everything we just said about Republicans. Here's what you need to know about Democrats could still get done if given a chance this November.
Well, and again, I think that's why President Biden has run for re-election, because he did a great job, but there's more work to do. But this is a guy who, after we lost 3 million jobs under Trump, including 83,000 in the state of Wisconsin, we've gained 15 million jobs under President Biden, including 189,000 in the state of Wisconsin. We've invested $7 billion in infrastructure here in the state of Wisconsin because of the president's work. We've increased 21 million more people have access to healthcare because of the work President Biden did. And 4.75 million people have had their student loans forgiven or qualified for public service loan forgiveness under the plans and the execution of those plans by President Biden. And I don't think it's any, you know, I mean, it's par for the course that Trump and his Supreme Court have gotten in the way of anything that tries to protect workers, anything that tries to protect people over profits. And, you know, 30 million more people could be getting support for their student loans if the Supreme Court hadn't done the will of the Republicans and undone and declared his acts unconstitutional.
Now, somewhere on the typical voters list, somewhere beyond like item number 7200, is the fact that a Democratic U.S. senator from New Jersey is now a convicted felon as well. But I wonder if there shouldn't be more said about how Democrats did not circle the wagons around Bob Menendez. They said, you're corrupt, you have to go. That's a big difference with the Republican Party. Or are only a few, you know, people like you and I going to care about this and nobody else is?
I mean, I just think that some things, you know, again, I used to say that like there are some good policy does not necessarily mean good campaign stuff. You know, some things just don't work. But I do think the contrast works of just how, you know, the Democrats immediately, I mean, there were one, you know, Senator Fetterman was calling for his expulsion. told him to get, you know, called for him to be off committees from day one. Democrats reject corruption because corruption's wrong. It sends the wrong message, and it's just wrong. You know, whereas Republicans are doing everything they can to bend over to turn, you know, this would-be dictator into a forever dictator.
And yet, I'm listening to you and Bill McCashin talking for Wisconsin Public TV, and McCashin, among others, is saying that this is all being blown up, that there is no actual threat to democracy. And Scott, I was watching it in disbelief in how you ask people to reject what their own eyes were telling them and what their own ears were hearing.
Well, I guess you would ask the five law enforcement officers who died after January 6th. They're the 140 law enforcement officers who were injured because of January 6th terrorist insurrection. You know, we sought to ask the representatives who were hiding behind desks, you know, as they were directed to do. Ask Josh Hawley, you know, who we saw scurrying through the Capitol running as fast as, you know, if I ran that fast, I would have finished the Ironman a whole lot quicker. That's for sure. You know, again, that's the difference between the two sides. You know, we don't have a divide, you know, we live in two alternative universes, you know, one where decency is seen as some sort of a weakness by this Republican team. Running things. The good news, again, is that the people are on our side when it comes to the issues. People are on Democrats' side. You know, over and over again, we've seen since Trump was elected in the state of Wisconsin, 17 of 19 statewide elections, Democrats have won. And a lot of those were even before, you know, the ending of Roe versus Wade, right, which continues to be toxic for Republicans. And what is their solution to it? They just put in the most extreme anti-abortion U.S. senator in the entire Senate. I would say he was the most unqualified, but Ron Johnson still is in the Senate, so I can't say that.
No, and that's where we'll have to leave it. Scott Ross, reporting from Panther Arena, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of the Thursday morning, 6:34 on Up North News Radio, and Joseph Pecky here is here with us now, right? Yeah, you're here now, and is going to talk about the Republican National Convention and whatever else is on our minds for this morning. Joe, how are you?
And what a convention it has been.
Yeah, it's been it's been different. We always knew it was going to be different. You've been down there near the site. What did you glean from, you know, the folks that you saw, and here's that word for 2024, vibe, the vibe that you got over there?
So the vibe for me was very weird. This is the first national political convention I've been to of either party. I did not go into Fiserv, but on Monday morning, I made it as far as Radio Row inside Panther Arena, kind of the media center just south of Fiserv. And I will say it was very weird. It was like invading another planet or something, because despite the horrific event over the weekend and the failed assassination attempt and this talk of a new tone, there you are walking past these right-wing talkers and podcasters and satellite shows, and they're doing all of the greatest hits of the darkest corners of QAnon and the ultra-MAGA right, from transgender conspiracy theories to totally unfounded, baseless accusations about undocumented immigrants voting in elections. And so it was probably the physically most proximate to the fever swamp that I have been, and it didn't feel great.
Did at any point did you feel like maybe you got assaulted? And by that I mean, did you get hip checked by Derek Van Orden or anybody else for that matter?
No. Okay. And I can't wait to see the video, because the notion of a former Navy SEAL being assaulted by a tiny woman wearing pink is just too rich and preposterous to be exactly the way it's been described. I also do want to add, I was swimming in the fever swamps, and there were also Republicans doing and saying the right things. I had actually an opportunity to appear on another show with one of our Republican congressmen, Brian Stile from the 1st District. He's being challenged by former state lawmaker and Secretary of Revenue Peter Barca. Peter's great. I hope Peter wins that race. and congressman style was completely appropriate, said all the right things, struck the right notes in sort of the first day, first hours of the convention, coming very quickly on the heels of what happened in Pennsylvania. And I thought he made an important point, which is we can lower the rhetoric. We can tone down some of the crazy talk and make it about the policy, because there are very different visions for this country between the two parties and very different things that they want to do. And so I appreciated that from him, and I don't want to lump in everybody as doing the transgender conspiracy nonsense, because it's not everybody.
No, it's not everybody, but I've also made clear this week, I'm not giving a pass to people who are now crying, we need to tone it down, we need to turn down the temperature. And these were the folks who were bringing the heat in the first place. And that includes, frankly, the hypocrisy about, you know, decrying an assassination attempt from the people who wear AR-15 lapel pins, you know, on the floors of Congress. And so there was this talk of, you know, having things be calmer, and will former President Trump tonight have a calmer speech? And my view all week has been, where have you been for these past many years? There's going to be no instant metamorphosis where Trump and the MAGA movement suddenly become, you know, less angry, annoying, divisive, whatever. And yet somehow too many people in media circles especially just lap it up.
I'm going to defend them. I don't think they're lapping it up. I think they genuinely want it to happen. And the human mind and the human heart has an inclination towards wanting to believe things that make life better. Our life would be better if the specter of political violence was not so great. If much of political violence had not been normalized in the last 8, 9, 10 years. I mean, we have seen assassination attempts against members of Congress. We have seen bomb makers arrested in vans down in Florida. We have seen now convicted criminals beat up police officers at the United States Capitol trying to stop the certification of a free and fair election. So this is not out of nowhere. And I understand everyone who wants us to try to figure out a way to dial down the rhetoric. There's a lot more work to do on the right to lower that rhetoric and to change that tone than there is on the left. And maybe that's the segue into J.D. Vance and the actual news out of the convention, because 48 hours after nearly losing his life, former President Trump chose someone who, out of everyone in public life, who was very responsible and measured and appropriate in the immediate aftermath of the assassination attempt, J.D. Vance was probably the least responsible. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is actually really, really easy and straightforward after an incident like that to say and do the right thing and to just say, thank God former President Trump is okay. Our hearts go out to the family of the heroic firefighter who lost his life trying to save his family, doing nothing more than trying to engage civically in his community and support a political candidate of his choosing. The fact that you can go and do that and not go home should mortify all of us and should remind us that we have to be responsible. And to, in that moment, go as far as J.D. Vance did is irresponsible. It is pretty reprehensible. And I don't expect that he is ever going to apologize for it. But if he did, it would be a start. And that is one of the differences. Has Joe Biden occasionally gone a little too far in his language? Did he put him in a bullseye in a private conversation, phone call with donors? Yeah. And is that the same thing as standing behind the podium and saying you're going to pardon January 6th criminals? No, it's not. But you know what Joe Biden did when he got called out on it by Lester Holt on Monday? He said, I shouldn't have used that language. That's leadership. That's growth. And that's recognizing that everyone does have a role to play.
I don't know. That to me is also the double standard that is applied way too often, that Democrats can't even pretend to use aggressive language. And suddenly they're the bad guys, whereas Republicans doing, oh, they're the tough party. And they don't get called on it nearly enough. And I'm not saying it's ever going to change. I just don't think it gets pointed out enough.
This is maybe the football coach in me, but what we tell the young men and sometimes women we coach mm-hmm. in football is You don't hold yourself to anybody else's standard. Set the standard yourself.
Sure. Well, I know where I would like the standard to be for the Democratic Party in this day and age, and that's a discussion we'll have to have another time. But I want to switch gears a bit with the selection of J.D. Vance and talk about how do we talk about democracy and the very real threat to democracy. And this talking point that's come up this week that you know, Trump can't possibly be thought of as a threat to democracy. That you know, people are talking about January 6th again being overblown. I get that the threat to democracy is not as big to many voters as pocketbook issues, maybe social issues, but I just don't like the fact that the point that, you know, Trump and Trumpism isn't a threat to democracy. Look how this process is unfolding in the convention is gaining traction when it frankly couldn't be farther from the truth. It may not be people's most important issue, Joe, it's still very much an issue.
It is. And there's, in my view, nothing more patriotic than engaging in civic and political debate and trying to win the argument and win elections to reflect the will of the people. And in order to do that, you have to be factual. You have to be true. And here is the reality of Senator J.D. Vance. He has said publicly that he would have done what Mike Pence refused to do. It's probably one of the big reasons that Trump picked him. On January 6th, had J.D. Vance been vice president, he would not have certified the election, which would have meant absolute chaos, no transfer of power, that a coup d'etat would have been executed in this country. And it is not me suggesting that J.D. Vance might do that down the road. He is telling us that if he had been in Mike Pence's shoes, he would have acted differently. That stands in stark contrast to the things that Democrats like Joe Biden and Tammy Baldwin are working on in the democracy space, where yesterday was actually 4 years since we lost the late, great Representative John Lewis, who was bloodied crossing that bridge in Selma and was one of the absolute icons of the civil rights movement throughout his life. Today, there are two pieces of legislation in Congress that have been introduced, co-sponsored by Tammy Baldwin in both cases, that try to live up to his legacy, the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. Those are pieces of legislation, bills, potential laws for this country that would make our democracy better, more inclusive, make our elections more secure and safer by supporting the people who administer them, by ensuring their basic rules of the road about when you can vote and how you can vote, getting the money out of politics so that people can restore a little bit of trust and confidence. That is the choice, or among the choices that people have to wrestle with as they think about, when we say Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are a threat to democracy, what do we mean? And where is Joe Biden on that? That is among the differences. Democrats are talking about concrete measures to strengthen our democracy, and Republicans aren't. They are back to already readying lawsuits to contest the results of the election if they don't win. This was lost because of what happened in Pennsylvania on Saturday. But Saturday morning, there was great reporting from the New York Times about how the Trump team felt like they had, you know, these are my words, not the New York Times's, but basically describing it as like if 2020 was the Raptors testing the fences in Jurassic Park, now they know how to get out of the cage and like actually execute a strategy to steal an election.
Yeah.
That should be terrifying. And we should understand that that's the difference.
For a lot of folks, Jurassic Park was just a movie show, and that what's happening in the here and now couldn't possibly happen, which, again, sounds like something out of Jurassic Park.
It is happening. And that's what I would remind people is we really did see women in this country lose a constitutionally protected right that they had had for half a century. The Dobbs decision overturned Roe v. Wade. It's gone. You want to codify Roe? You want to restore it? You've got to vote one way. The right to access IVF if you want to start a family is under attack from the right in this country. They tried it in Alabama. Democrats in Washington said, oh my gosh, this is too far. We have to codify protections to IVF so that loving parents who want to start a family can do that. And as it was brought to the floor of the United States Senate, Senate Republicans, including J.D. Vance, blocked it. It's happening. It's not like it's not your imagination. It's not crazy people on the radio. Go read a newspaper. The Associated Press, Reuters, all of these trusted institutions can explain to you how Republicans blocked that bill that would have protected IVF. That has an impact on people. We look at Project 2025. This is not a figment of the left's imagination. It is an actual, honest-to-God, 900-page playbook that you can be sure Donald Trump and J.D. Vance, if given the opportunity, will enact, and their administration would be stacked with people who had a hand in writing it and believe in a vision of America that is unrecognizable. I mean, it is crazy, but go read it for yourself. Everything from banning pornography to preventing mifepristone from being prescribed to firing civil servants without cause. It is a radical reshaping of the American system of government that we the people do not want. We want our government to work better. We don't want to blow it up like Project 2025 would.
In a different time, in a different place, the biggest worry we would have this week is the sadness of watching Corbin Burns start the All-Star game in a Baltimore Orioles hat instead of a Milwaukee Brewers hat. This has just not been a typical convention week, Joe Zepecki.
These are not typical times, but we're going to get through them together, friends. Hang in there.
God bless you for it. Joe Zepecki, thank you so much. Have a great start to the weekend.
You too.
We will have today's history lesson coming up in just a moment. This is Up North News Radio from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network. Time for today's history lesson, and it starts with happy birthday wishes to Martha Reeves. Martha Reeves and the Vandal is 83 years old today. Happy birthday to her. I'm reminded, I don't remember if it was a year or 2 years ago on Martha Reeves' birthday, Aaron Zommers was sitting in the producer chair and told me about a silent version of Dancing in the Street. Have you seen this? Do you know what I'm talking about, Greg?
Yeah.
You have to be mindful that this was remade by Mick Jagger and David Bowie in the 1980s. And in the video, they're dancing like crazy. They're dancing and they're singing and they're dressed all flashy. But somebody reimagined it. So you see them, but it's as if there's no music playing. And all you hear is the shoes are shuffling and they're kind of whispering the words, like trying to lip sync along to it. It's hilarious. Look up silent version. I'd play it here, but it's a silent version. You wouldn't get as much out of it.
Oh,
silent version,
I pulled it up
Dancing
everything.
In the Street. Oh. You can play a little bit if you want. Yeah, absolutely. Give a taste. They're going down the street right now.
They're
dancing.
They have done
a little bit more dancing.
A little more dancing, and then Mick Jagger just it's literally like it's the entire song. And now what they've done is they've done other videos where like it's the Who playing and it's squeaking shoes and like plunking guitars and
it's so good. So do yourself a favor, look that up. Let's see. So Martha Reeves, 83 today. Dion DiMucci is 85 years old today. The Bronx native had several hits in the early 60s, including. Well, he sings about Runaround Sue, which, by the way, on that same album, he was the Wanderer. So, I mean, pot kettle black. Anyway, actor James Brolin is 84 years old today. So, a lot of good folks in their early 80s. Let's see. Singer Ryan Cabrera has a birthday today. He's 42. He's had several hits. One of the slower ones is one of my favorites.
Ooh, that is some late 90s, early 2000s hair right there. Mr. Ryan Cabrera.
I won't talk.
It's a very nice song, though. True is the name of that one. Actor Vin Diesel is 57. Actress Kristen Bell is 44. And I'll just never get tired of the look on her face as she realizes this is the bad place.
I love that show so much.
I think Ted Lasso is the only more recent show. I think prior to that, The Good Place was the last show I made sure to watch cover to cover.
Yeah.
Start to finish, and completely worth it all the way through. Some series finales disappoint. This one does not. It's very poignant.
If you want some real good, like, sweet feelings, also go to YouTube, look up Kristen Bell, Craig Ferguson. When she was a guest on his show, when he was the late night talk show host, it was the best relationship. You want to be like, can you guys just be, I mean, you're both married, can you just be married to each other too? You guys seem like best friends. Like, they love each other truly.
And besties. It's just,
yeah.
Not nearly enough of that in Tinseltown.
Yeah.
Brenda Lee had the number one hit this day in 1960, a song she recorded when she was just 15 years old.
I'm sorry, so sorry.
So when people are like, you know, she does Rocking Around the Christmas Tree and she's still performing. Yeah. Well, yeah, she was 15, 16 when these songs were big hits.
So Dynamite when she was like 12.
Yeah, she's had a big, long, and well-deserved career. NSYNC got a big boost in the U.S. this day in 1998 when their concert special aired on the Disney Channel. They weren't supposed to air. Their boy band rivals, the Backstreet Boys, backed out because one member of their group needed surgery. And NSYNC was kind of languishing on the charts with I Want You Back. But because of that Disney special preemption, the rest is history. In 1976, the Summer Olympics were underway in Montreal, and we all got real sick of hearing this tune, but not sick of the gymnast who inspired it.
Wait.
No, we're not watching The Young and the Restless. This is a song that got renamed as Nadia's theme. Because on this day in 1976, Romania's Nadia Comăneci became the first person in Olympic history to score a perfect 10 in gymnastics. Greg still looks confused by this.
It's so depressing.
It was beautiful when you put her all of her moves to it. By the way, she did not perform to this. She performed to something totally different. This was some TV producer that put a highlight reel together.
Yeah.
And everybody was like, what's that song? Oh, that song is great. And the song actually went up the charts for a short time in 1976. And then Young and the Restless took it. You thought that song was annoying. Wait till you see what the big hit of 1992 was on this day by Miley Cyrus's dad. Now, of course, Billy Ray Cyrus, that was a number one hit on the country charts. On this day in 1992, it reached its peak on the Billboard Hot 100, getting as high as number four. On this day in 2008, the last play at Shea Stadium, was shut down with Billy Joel playing the very final concert, the final show before it was torn down and became, what is it now, Citi Field or something like that for the New York Mets.
Yeah.
In the Up North News Daily Newsletter, I did not know until I saw it this very morning, Mr. Bach, that it was on this day, July 18th, 1984, 40 years ago today, that George and Ruth and Craig and Lee Culver opened their first family restaurant, Culver's Frozen Custard and Butter Burgers in Sauk City. Happy birthday, Culver's.
Happy
40 years old today.
Birthday.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to them.
Well, it's one thing to open up like one family restaurant. I mean, that's a big deal in itself.
Yeah.
They now have more than 900 locations across the country. So whatever they did it right.
Yeah. We went to Georgia last year. No, this year. And I saw a sign for a Culver's. I'm like, what?
Yep. Uh-huh. So good on them. Christina puts more about the Culver's anniversary in the daily newsletter. Sign up at upnorthnewswi.com. This is National Nelson Mandela Day, the anniversary of his birth. National Dapper Your Data Day, which is, I guess, a term to maybe change your passwords, make your data more private. Be aware of your data privacy, much like you should be aware of lasagna, because on this is the 18th day of Lasagna Awareness Month. This is also National Sour Candy Day and National Caviar Day, something you either consider a delicacy or, ew, fish eggs.
It's
so much
a
more
garnish.
Ahead. In the second hour of Up North News Radio, live from Lake Wissota on the Civic Media Radio Network.